It's been a tough year for Australian miners, not least for Fortescue Metals Group, Australia's third largest iron ore producer. When the iron ore price plummeted in September, Fortescue was forced to sack 1,000 staff, pull back on its expansion plans in the Pilbara, and restructure $5 billion in borrowings. But Fortescue chairman and founder Andrew Forrest says the company has now emerged from those turbulent times in good shape, and he dismisses concerns about the company's heavy debt load. In this exclusive interview, Andrew Forrest is speaking with our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell, in Perth.
I don't think there should be any concern myself. There's no principal repayments for 3 or 4 years. There's no major repayments of any sort for 5 years. You know, I think we're in really stable shape. We can easily cover the interest, I think, at almost any iron ore price. And so we're in very good shape. The iron ore price will be higher and lower than what it is today. For that, we are certain. You need a balance sheet and a repayment schedule which enjoys, lives through happily, the highs and the lows. If you have short-term debt you happen to catch an iron ore low, that can risk a company. So we change that completely to long-term debt. And you can see by the enthusiasm of the world's bankers, they know the Fortescue business model. They can look straight through very transparently. They can see our costs, they can see our revenues, they can see our competitive position in the world. And what was their vote? Their vote was, this is a very good company. We will give them as much capital as they need to become bulletproof. And they did.
So if the model is so strong, why did you seek a deferral from the WA government on your state royalty payments, reportedly around $200 million? Why did you need to do that?
Oh, that's a very easy question to answer. Basically, if the iron ore price stays low and we defer in order to be frugal, to live out that frugality principle fundamental to Fortescue, we defer the King's Project. That is a 40 million tonne iron ore operation. The revenues to the government of those royalties are much more than $200 million. Now, if we defer it because we take a line ball decision, one of those difficult, you know, there's two right answers here, you've got to pick the best right answer, to defer that project, then that cash flow does not come through to the West Australian people anywhere near as early as it could. Now, it makes absolute sense for a government to say, well, hang on, we really want that cash flow as soon as possible, so we'll defer a royalty now in order to have twice the royalty for the next 40 or 50 years, starting, admittedly, a little later. And we put that logic to the West Australian government. It was sound then, it's sound now, but of course with the iron ore price recovered, the argument for it is a lot less, but we put it to the government at a low iron ore price.
And what's their response now? Are they on board?
Oh, look, they can see the logic, absolutely. But with the iron ore price going from $90 to $120, they're saying, hey, guys, you can bring forward the King's Project any time you like. Of course, they're right. But at $90, we would have needed that deferral in order to still make that decision to push ahead with King's. But King's, it's 40 million tonnes. It'll take less than $1 billion to complete. It'll repay that $1 billion approximately, or in fact less than every 6 months. So it's a fabulous investment and this company is going to do it. We're just waiting for the next board meeting to determine that timing.
Let's turn to China, perhaps, a country you know better than most. You travel there frequently. Now, this week we've seen a once-in-a-decade transition to a new generation of Chinese leaders. Do you think the new regime is going to now unleash further stimulus to boost the Chinese economy?
I have met with the Chinese leadership, and in particular, Xi Jinping, the new president to be, on a number of occasions. Two of which gave me an opportunity to learn about the man, and I believe that gentleman, his empathy with the Chinese people, his ability to look through complex economic and political problems, his natural humility, where he believes his role here, like all of us, have a dream. His dream is to remove poverty in any major measurable way from the people of China. And that's his focus. And that to me is true, is just, is a wonderful goal for any leader. He sees it as the economic tide which will float all the households, which will float all the boats in China. He intends to build up that economy to eradicate any major measurable poverty in China. That's got to be great for Australia. We need to knuckle down and take advantage of that opportunity and not let other countries supply those services and supply those resources, which they can, if we take that Chinese relationship for granted.
Do you think Australia is losing its competitive advantage in terms of selling to China?
I think we've been kind of pretty laissez-faire, that China's always going to be there and we can pick and choose what we want from the relationship a little. But I believe those times are gone. I think that with this, with the new leadership in China and the refocusing, I'm seeing across the political landscape that, hey, we don't lose our essential Australianness. We don't stop being the wonderful culture and people which make up Australia by being completely unafraid to engage Asia, by being completely ambitious to be one of the most important suppliers and players in the whole Asian region and still be our essential and beautiful Australian people. We can do both.
I'm speaking with the Fortescue Chairman, Andrew Forrest. Martin Ferguson, the Resources Minister, said this week, actually, that this had to be a joint effort in terms of lifting Australia's competitiveness, and the industry too had become sort of fat and lazy, were his words, on the boom times of high iron ore prices. I mean, what do you say to that?
The Minister is very welcome to his views. You manage companies differently when you're totally volume orientated to take advantage of high prices. I'm sure the Minister is referring to that. Perhaps he could have chosen more diplomatic words, but the mining industry is a highly competitive industry here in Australia, and we will only maintain our competitive market share, which the Australian people deserve, by being even more competitive, by putting that extra mile in, that extra mile, the only one which counts. The mining industry has to do that, but so does the government. The government needs to really support the mining industry. If the industry is one which is environmentally neutral, then why is it that the government cannot say this is one of the finest industries we have in the world? If it can leave an area in at least the same environmental state that it found it in before it started mining, then you have an industry which is environmentally friendly, which raises enormous revenues to give Australians the lifestyle which we all enjoy, which employs hundreds of thousands of people and indirectly millions of people, which does all the things which we admire about Australian industry. And I would challenge government to treat the industry like that, to hold the industry up and to really encourage it.
You are maintaining the rage, I guess, against the federal government's mining tax. The High Court has agreed to hear your challenge on the MRRT. Now, like BHP and Rio Tinto, your liability under the tax is this year is likely to be minimal, if anything. So what's the principle you're trying to prove here?
Oh, look, it's quite simple. We've taken the MRRT, the mining tax, to the High Court because it is a result of the lack of governance which it was created from. We don't believe it's constitutional. We'd like that tested by the highest court in the land, and we're challenging it purely on the basis of its lack of constitutionality.
The Federal Treasurer, Wayne Swan, though, says that the challenge is futile. Western Australia, Queensland, New South Wales governments would seem to agree because they've decided not to join you in that action. How do you rate your chances of winning this?
I'm not sure if that's correct. I mean, we've had a lot of support out of those governments. Also, what we're going to the court on is becoming clearer, and the arguments are becoming clearer. It's, of course, not us which has been seeking to delay the process for as long as possible, indeed, perhaps even till after the election. It's us who is confident enough to bring this case on as quickly as possible, have it heard, have it determined, is it unconstitutional or is it not? And our enthusiasm to run this case is because we believe it's fundamentally unconstitutional. It interferes in the rights of states. I really can't add anything further but to say it should be challenged. And all it takes for evil to conquer is for good people to do nothing. And we've decided to not be one of the ones who do nothing.
You're passionate about a lot of causes, in particular improving Indigenous employment. Do you find it ironic, though, that mining projects like, say, Gina Rinehart's Roy Hill project is seeking to recruit labour from overseas to fill labour shortages? Of course, when, as your Generation One campaign employment program has found, there's a lot of local Indigenous labour in these areas who could fill these positions given the chance or the training.
Well, look, I wouldn't pick on Roy Hill, but what I would say is that we need, as a nation, to put down forever the welfare model of how to get rid of the disparity amongst First Australians and everyone else. The welfare model, which people still subscribe to, which politicians today still subscribe to, which voters all around the country are still subscribing to, is directly responsible for the misery of the Indigenous disparity we suffer. We've got to walk away from that model. We've got to say it's broken. What we must go down the road of now is opportunity and responsibility. Give people a fishing rod, teach them how to fish, and they will feed themselves for a lifetime.
Fortescue Chairman Andrew Forrest speaking with our business editor Cheryl Bagwell in Perth.